The next item on the agenda is Virginia Timberline LLC. Mr. Stagg? For the audience's information, you may recall, and for the commission's information, this is a matter that was continued from last month's meeting. Just have a brief synopsis of what we discussed, and then we will hear from a representative, either counsel or a representative from the company from Timberline LLC.
I'm not going to go through this. I have the same presentation that we had last month, and I'm just going to put one slide up. We can view any of the slides the commission might need in further discussion. There is a map at each end of your table, a paper map. It's an aerial photograph. It is pre-marsh disturbance, but it does outline the approximate area that was disturbed, including the mowing and the traversing. It's approximately 282 acres. That question was asked last month, is what was the approximate total area. So we tried to, we took that through the CAD system, so that acreage is pretty accurate. And with that, unless the commission has any additional questions.
Any questions for Mr. Stagg from last month's meeting? You will recall we do have a motion and a second on the table pertaining to the assessment of a civil charge of $370,000. That motion at the present time has been tabled to allow council or representatives from Timberline to appear. So with that, is anyone here from Timberline LLC? Would you come forward, please, ma'am? Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning.
State your name, please, and who you represent.
My name is Marina Phillips. I'm a lawyer with Kaufman and Knolls.
Good to have you here, ma'am.
Thank you. And I have with me also Michelle Manners, who is in-house counsel with Virginia Timberline, who is here to answer questions and possibly...
Also a member of the Virginia Bar?
No, sir.
No, sir. I am in-house counsel. I'm a member of the Massachusetts Bar. I work at corporate headquarters.
Okay. Could you raise your right hand? Be solemn to swear the testimony that you may give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Thank you, ma'am. Proceed, counsel.
First of all, I do want to thank the commission for their accommodation in granting the 30-day deferral from the consideration of your motion in May to give us an opportunity to make this presentation today. So thank you very much. I listened to the minutes of your last meeting, and I heard the commissioner's suggestion that we didn't want to repeat what was done there, so just want to let you know that I'm not here to discuss whether or not the violations occurred, merely to address the proposed motion of a civil charge.
And for the record, you have listened to the proceedings in its entirety?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
For this item only, yes. For the record, we would like to resolve this matter here with the Marine Resources Commission and not have it proceed to circuit court, and that's my mission here today to work with you. Based on a series of factors that I'd like to present to you, we don't believe that the civil charge that you have proposed so far is commensurate with the level of the action that occurred, and we also do not think that there's substantial evidence to support that civil charge if in fact it did get moved up to circuit court. And that's what I'm here to discuss today. First of all, with respect to the issue of do you have the authority to impose a civil charge on a violation for each day of violation. I know that was part of your thinking in the calculation that was proposed. When I look at your authorizing statute, section 28.2.12.13, there are two sections there. I'm sure you know A and B. One refers to the civil charge that can be imposed by consent of the applicant by the commission, and the other if it does get referred to the Attorney General and heard in circuit court. The in Section A, which talks about the hearing before circuit court, it specifically references $25,000 for each day of violation. In 28.2.12.13b, which imposes the authority for the commission to enter into a consent agreement, there is not the statement per day of violation. And I work a lot with the Department of Environmental Quality. I know that in their statutes where they have the authority to impose a violation per day of violation, that's specifically stated in the statute. So my point here is to suggest that the Marine Resources Commission does not have the authority to calculate a civil charge by determining how many days the violation occurred. Furthermore, the civil charge of $370,000 is inconsistent with other violations and other civil charges that you have historically imposed, both in amount and in the fact that you are trying to impose it, counting how many days of violations occurred. I found an article in the Virginian Pilot which discusses a case that you have already heard. Actually, it was in May of last year, which was the Salmons case, in which a developer of a Norfolk condominium illegally dredged the Elizabeth River. I'm sure you're familiar with the case, but just for the record, let me read that Salmons did not have a completed state permit for the job. He tore up shallows and tidal wetlands by cutting an illegal channel through them and dumped muddy waste scooped from the bottom of the river in the wrong disposal site. The characterization of this activity was inexcusable and severe, and that's, again, from the newspaper. The penalties there, the civil charges, were $14,621 against the developer and $15,000 against the subcontractor, for a total of just under $30,000 for a violation that was in area much more, much larger than what we're talking about here today, and also in impact much larger because it was permanent, whereas ours, as your scientific advisor of Virginia Institute of Marine Science has indicated, this violation in this particular instance is not permanent. It's not going to cause a permanent impact to the subaqueous bottoms.
But it remains in question as to how long it is going to be impacted. I flew over it last Friday in the course of my business, and it's still significantly visible from the air.
I understand that, Mr. Commissioner, and one thing I would like to point out is a lot of what we see there is impacts to wetlands, is impacts to the tidal marsh. I understand the commissioners know this, but your jurisdiction is to the subaqueous bottoms, and a lot of the territory that was impacted is not subaqueous bottoms. In fact, the vast majority of it. The quote that Mr. Stagg just gave of the figure of how many acres were impacted was 282. Of those, less than two are subaqueous bottoms that were impacted, that were potentially impacted.
Counselor, would you agree that the figure, as I recall, that was provided by Timberline of the linear feet was approximately 142,000 linear feet of impact?
I did hear that figure on the audio tape.
That was provided by Timberline, and I would submit to you that the mowing of the marsh, per se, may not be, but every one of those ruts that you see that are there are impacts that are under the jurisdiction of the Marine Resources Commission.
Yes, sir.
Would you agree with that?
Yes, sir.
Thank
yes,
you.
Sir. Yes, sir. I'm just trying to point out the ratio.
Yes, ma'am.
Which goes to the level of violation and civil charge, civil penalty. And recall that in the original evaluation, staff to the commission did recommend one violation at a $10,000 civil charge. One other thing that I wanted to point out to you, and I do have an exhibit to show you if I might hand these out.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Beth.
Thank you. We have been doing some research. I'm a biologist, so this has been kind of interesting to me. I didn't take much history in college, so I had an opportunity, because this is a historic area, to talk to a title company regarding the historical title of the area on this property. And we have not been able to track it all the way back, but we have been able to track it back to probably the 1800s at this point. It takes a long time, I find, to go back 400 years, and the title examiner has to tell me every person who was married to who person and who died in the massacre of 1620 and therefore didn't get his patent from the king, even though he brought 100 people over on the boat. And I was like, yeah, okay. But
tell me what time it is. Don't take me to the watch back.
Yes,
I understand.
But he was really into it, so I had to put my biology to the side and listen to the history. But what I have shown you here is two plats, one from 1955 and one from 1933, that do indicate that the property line includes this marsh area. And where I'm trying to go with this is that in the event that the Crown has granted a patent to a landowner that includes this property, then the Commission does not have jurisdiction over the property. I will tell you, we have not been able to go back that far, but should we, simply because of timing, but should we have to, in the event that we end up in circuit court, we will continue that. One thing that he was able to find is on the opposite side of Lawns Creek in the Sussex County area, there is a patent
That would be Surrey County.
I mean, sorry. Excuse me.
Okay.
That he was able to find a patent that indicated that hawking, hunting, fishing, and fowling rights were given to that patent holder over Lawns Creek. And what I'm told is the granting of hunting, fishing, fowling, and hawking rights is 1600s code for giving rights to the subaqueous bottoms. And if he has shown that there is rights to the subaqueous bottoms on Lawns Creek already granted to somebody on the opposite side of Lawns Creek from us, there is a possibility that we could find a similar grant on the eastern side of Lawns Creek. But again, we have not gone that far in our research at this time simply because of time. But that's just another thing that I want you to take into consideration when you're calculating what evidence there is to support a $370,000 or such charge in court, and why we would like to resolve something with you here today. That is the basis of our argument at this point today. Of course, when you're also considering something that will be possibly referred to the Attorney General, you have to take into consideration whether or not the Attorney General will actually prosecute the case, and then what will happen to it when you get into circuit court. So our respectful request to you today is to reconsider the civil charge that you are going to impose and At this point, a $370,000 one is not one that Virginia Timberline will consent to before the commission, but we are certainly open and willing to a lesser penalty that is that we will consent to, and we would like to resolve it today.
Okay.
Any questions? I'm happy to answer.
Just, I think, let me get a point of order correct. We do have a motion and a second on the floor. In order to further the discussion and ask further questions, I'm wondering, Carl, do we need to, not that it can't be brought back up and or resurrected, do we need to lay aside that motion, or have the motion withdrawn at this juncture prior to asking any further questions from counsel?
I don't think so. I think you can ask the questions. I think you can engage in discussion on that motion, and if it turns out that you want to consider something else, you could have a substitute motion.
Okay. That's fine. Questions from the commission?
I've got an observation.
Counsel?
If this case were referred to the Attorney General's office, I don't think the Attorney General or myself would consider us limited to the $370,000 that is in the motion from last month, because the civil penalty authorized under subsection A of that statutory section is $25,000 per day, and that would entail determining how many days were involved, whether it's 37 or less. I don't know at this point. I mean, there's conflicting information in the record.
I think the information that's on record, at least at the Isle of Wight Wetlands Board, who provided that, I don't really recall, but the 37-day number we did not come up with. Someone else did. So, and the other thing that is certain is the 142,000 number of linear feet of encroachment was provided by Timberline under oath and on the record here. So those are two benchmarks, for lack of a better term, that we do have on the record that can be verified. Mr. Fox.
Well, as we sit here, I think we are representatives of the Commonwealth of Virginia, who, at least at this moment, we think owns the subaqueous land.
Yes, sir.
And what we had here, if we don't approach it from the day's standpoint, we could look at it from the number of trespasses that were imposed on our land, the land that belongs to the Commonwealth and the land that belongs to the citizens of the Commonwealth. And someone said that it would appear that there were at least 50 crossings. Now, I don't know whether that counts one tire or four tires, but 50 crossings. And if we wanted to look at 10,000 per crossing, that is a larger number than the 370,000.
Right, that's going in the wrong direction.
But what I hear you saying is that there's no argument that you all are guilty of doing something that was inappropriate. What I'm hearing you say is we're down to talking about money. I'm interested in hearing more, I guess.
How much does Timberline believe is the appropriate amount to solve this, what I still believe to be egregious violation? And I might add that I'm not swayed at all by the, I don't mean in the wrong way, but the article of the Virginian Pilot that dealt with what Mr. Salmon did. I'm not putting the two together and coming up with the same type of violation. I understand your point in bringing that out, and I think probably trying to set a mark that maybe Timberline thinks is appropriate based on a similar violation, but in looking at that, I don't think that they're equitable. That's just my personal observation as commissioner.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I respectfully disagree with you.
I understand.
And that's the position that I would present to the circuit court as well, and just mention that, yes, that does look like a large area of impact occurred, but that area is not all in the jurisdiction of the commission. I'm not even trying to compare this Salmon's case with this situation as an equal. In my scientific opinion, the Salmon's case was worse. I think it was, dredging tidal bottoms and not merely encroaching upon them, possibly to cause mud waves. I mean, from a scientific and a biological perspective, I put the, and yes, we can't always accept the adjectives that the Virginia pilot uses. I agree with you there, but I think from a scientific perspective, that was a more substantial violation, and I think a court would view it that way.
Maybe not.
Well, most importantly is that the Virginia Institute of Marine Science did not feel that this violation was a permanent one. This activity imposed permanent violations, and there's some information that perhaps even causing the little mud waves is not technically a violation of the commission's statute. And I'm not arguing, to answer your question, Mr. Fox, I'm not arguing guilt or innocence here because the commissioner in the minutes said he didn't want to rehash everything that was discussed last week, but that is something that I could reserve to present in a court should that occur or be required.
What do you believe, what's Timberline's position?
Somewhere between 20 and 50,000.
Dr. McConaughey.
I have a question. You're saying the dredging was worse than this, where in this fact we're actually compacting the bottom area. How quickly do you think dredging recovers biologically as a biologist?
I think it would take much longer for it to recover than these small encroachments. Yeah. I can't give you month or year or whatever, but I mean maybe never.
I would have to disagree. I think that in just a few years you would actually have organisms down in the bottom of a dredge as opposed to this being compacted where it may not recover for 10 years or 20 years.
Well, it's hard to tell. I mean, the tide moves the sediment.
In both places, yes.
Yes, sir.
Well, I think there's another issue here, too. The fact that Timberline...
Mr. Schick, for the record, I'm sorry.
knew that they needed to come to the commission because they've been to the commission on other issues and ignored that avenue makes this situation much worse than a subcontractor coming in and making an error. This type of activity, trying to get forgiveness as opposed to permission, cannot be tolerated. And your offer, in my opinion, is a slap in the face to the Commonwealth of Virginia. I just can't see somebody, violating these, the system and expecting to come along and pay, in percentage to what they stand to make in profit, such a small portion. It really is a slap in the face to the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had several points. Two issues that were raised by applicants' counsel. One, they indicated that the staff had recommended a single charge of $10,000, and that's not the way, for the record, that I read staff's recommendation. Staff has recommended an appropriate civil charge based on a significant environmental impact and major degree of noncompliance. So $10,000 is simply a guideline, and I think when we begin to consider the degree and scale of the noncompliance, you know, $10,000 is not an appropriate charge.
Well,
the
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Fair enough, but I was referring to the original staff evaluation for the May hearing. But you're right, it has been changed this
Thank
time.
The second, the staff is, or applicant's counsel has indicated that there's no provision in the code reference for a daily basis for a civil charge. I would submit that, as I read it, that that is not precluded either. That is using a daily basis for trying to calculate a charge. In terms of getting at some sort of basis for the charge, I think a daily basis is not unreasonable or precluded by the code. I think, secondly, as Mr. Fox has pointed out, the record does indicate that the subaqueous bottom was traversed dozens of times. So that could pose another possible basis. Finally, the scale generally of this is I think, where we end up considering a reasonable charge. The scale is rather extraordinary, and I think without precedent. I agree with Commissioner Bowman that to compare it to the salmon dredging case is probably not in order. I think this is a much larger scale of the in terms of damages that were done to subaqueous bottom and to the wetlands. But as far as what's jurisdictional, you know, 282 acres comprises the total scale of the area, but perhaps only a couple of acres, council has indicated, were damaged that are subaqueous bottom. So if you just consider that acreage, what might be the value of those 2 acres? I mean, I think to say that they're only worth $10,000 or $20,000 a piece is entirely out of line with with the way the state would view their value. Finally, if we were to accept such a low offer for their value, I think there's absolutely no mechanism for disincentive. I think it simply becomes a cost of doing business when you consider that dozens of waterfront lots are in play and we're driving this action. If a developer can simply pay a $20,000 to $50,000 penalty in order to develop many waterfront lots, then that's a very small cost of doing business. I don't think there's any real genuine disincentive to the applicant or developer. So I think the value that's been offered by council is substantially too low.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Holland.
I would like to put a substitute motion on the floor to get this. They've offered 20 to 50. I would like to see if we put $100,000 on the table.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Robbins. Be voting on the substitute motion. Or further discussion on the substitute motion before we go further.
Yes, if this is just an offer that's on the table for today,
mm-hmm.
not for discussion for future.
I think the commission
take it or leave it type.
After this vote, that's it. We're moving on to the next item. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. The commission has decided to levy civil charge of $100,000 for the violation. You have, Carl, you can correct me if I'm wrong, the right to accept that or reject it. If you reject that, then we will ask that the Attorney General's office take over the case.
May I have one moment to confer with my client?
Absolutely, you may. Ma'am, as a matter of fact, can you talk right there, or do you want to go? I can take about a 2-minute recess. Okay.
That's okay.
Thank you. Mr. Commissioner.
Yes, ma'am.
On behalf of the VA Timberline, we will accept the fee as levied by the commission. I would like an opportunity to Mr. Robbins' point about the cost of doing business.
Ma'am?
Ma'am, yeah, I need you to state your name again for the record, please.
My name is Michelle Manners. I am corporate counsel for VA Timberline. And
2 minutes.
Probably 30 seconds.
Okay.
People stop interrupting. I would just like to comment on Mr. Robbins' point about the cost of doing business with regard to this.
the harm that the employees that executed this ill-fated plan have been discharged for VA Timberline for mismanagement of the project. And the harm that they have done to the reputation of our company, which we take very seriously, goes far beyond any fee that the commission could impose. And I would suggest to you as you go further that nobody who has a reputation that wants to continue to do business as we do wants to continue to do business in the Commonwealth. And I think that Mr. Watkins, when he was here last month, expressed that to you. And I think if you spoke to the county commissioners in Isle of Wight, Mr. Watkins's approach is far exceeded his predecessor. Nobody would believe that we would engage in this kind of behavior because $20,000 or $50,000 would be the cost of doing business. We want to be good partners in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and we are going to strive mightily to make sure that this type of situation does not occur again. And I want to make sure that everybody knows that.
Well, I appreciate you making that comment because that's exactly what we want as well. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next item on the agenda is item number 6, H. Alexander Wilson III, 7-0384. Mr. Nykirk, good morning.
Yes, sir. Good morning.